Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents All I Wanted Was to Become a Scientist, But Now I've Got an Alien Boyfriend, by Petra Palermo. Narrated by Ada Sinclair and Oliver Highpoint. Chapter 1. Hovering. Jesse. It's probably strange that my first real encounters with therapy have been after being abducted by aliens. But here I am, 1 month after being rescued and talking about my feelings in a ring of uncomfortable plastic chairs. Granted, I'm on a planet 260,000 parsecs from Earth, but the makeshift dorms at the Santa Frulsix Palace feel an awful lot like a church gymnasium. I make a mental note not to wear shorts to these meetings again because the humidity on this planet is killer. I wince slightly as I shift my hips, my bare thighs sticking to the molded plastic seat. The timid woman to my right speaks softly next to me. I don't think I've forgiven the universe for any of this yet, she says meekly. Her long blonde hair falls in sheets over her eyes as she rounds her shoulders in. She doesn't brush it away, treating it almost like a security blanket. It's a shit card we've been dealt. There are no rules saying you need to forgive anyone. It's Sarah, right? Across from us sits Camille, her elbows popped up on her knees as she reassures the woman next to me. I just had forgiven so many people to get where I was on Earth. I was finally feeling like I could be my own person. Then boom! The teens ruined everything. Sarah's voice gets a bit shaky, and not for the first time in my life. I wish I was good at comforting people. Camille steps to her, thankfully, and wraps her arms around Sarah, the fragile girl's chest now heaving. Sarah grips her sepia-colored skin tightly, leaning into the hug. It's okay not to be okay. We're all working through this fucked-up shit together, Camille says with a calming authority. She's the kind of person who can be strong for the group. She's the one who recommended all of us Earth gals have these group therapy sessions. People kind of just assumed she had some kind of psychology degree because she was so good at getting us to open up. We discovered the truth when someone referred to Camille as doctor. Oh, don't get it twisted. I'm not a therapist. Back on Earth, I was a daycare provider. But before that, I was president of my sorority. More importantly, I'm the oldest daughter, and y'all are my little sisters now, whether you like it or not. Somehow, it didn't make her help any less valid. Some people are just good at peopling. I am not. Sarah's body stills finally, and Camille releases her from the hug. I just want to go home, to start over. Sarah sniffs. I know, baby, we all want that, but it's not an option. Beyond the human virus all these aliens seem to think infects Earth, there's the logistics of it. Do we just show back up at the same time? What do we tell everyone about aliens when we get home? Would they even believe us? Some of us have been in cryosleep longer than others. What if the Earth those women left isn't the one they recognize? Camille speaks sweetly even when she poses all these hypothetical questions. I know. It still just sucks, Sarah says. It does. Camille pats her on the shoulder. The women both return to their seats, and Camille turns her attention to me. So, Jesse, is there anything you want to talk about? Any frustrations you need to air? She gives me her full attention, and her eye contact is so direct I immediately drop my gaze. Frustrations? I ask rhetorically. I mean, yes, obviously. I'm frustrated because I can't do what I'm good at here. Do you want to tell us what you're good at, babe? Maybe we can help you find your niche here on Santa Frul 6, Camille says kindly. Yeah, they just set up Betty with the palace kitchens. She's a chef who misses cooking. She's, like, so excited to learn about all the new Santa Frul 6 cuisine. I don't know who Betty is, but I suppose I am happy for her. I'm a scientist. I worked at NASA, I tell the group.
Oh, so like an honest-to-God rocket scientist? Sarah asks.
Sure, I say, even though it's not true. People hear NASA and get disappointed to hear I'm just a chemical engineer. Hell, I even told Opal I was a rocket scientist. I worked in developing new metals and ceramics for the next wave of spacecraft, so I was rocket adjacent, at least. It won't do me any good to nitpick the title. That's a bigger request than being set up in the palace kitchens, isn't it? Camille says softly.
You could say that, I scoff.
Well, maybe we can start helping you by learning a bit more about you, Jesse. I feel like since you're not staying in the Earth 2 dorms, we don't know you quite as well as we know each other.
I've been staying with my alien roommate, Grayseth, since I crashed the mag bus, and he rescued me from drowning when the bus landed in the ocean. It wasn't intentional to sequester myself from the other human women, but it was somehow easier to be apart from them at first. Bad memories just kept resurfacing whenever I was around them. Staying with Grayseth has been the more simple of the two options.
I'm Jesse, I'm 27, and from Florida.
Like by Disney World?
A small brunette asks, her eyes lighting up.
Not really. I grew up in the Panhandle, and I worked in the Cape Canaveral area, you know, near NASA.
I never actually had gone to Disney World, and I guess at this point, I never would.
That's so wild that you're a rocket scientist. I would have thought you were, like, a model or a really classy stripper.
A girl with a buzzed head from the opposite side of the circle of chairs says. I can see a butterfly tattoo peeking out near the collar of her shirt and wonder what species it might be. I have a feeling she wouldn't know if I asked her, though.
Just because it's your special interest doesn't mean anyone else cares, I remind myself.
There's no worse feeling than being excited to share something you think is cool and be met with bored or annoyed faces.
Jesus, Katie, read the fucking room.
First, sex work is real work. Second, we were all space strippers. Just because you were still in cryo when your ship was rescued doesn't make you better than the rest of us bubble babes, Camille corrects.
You know that's not what I meant, Cammy. I meant that she's hot. She scoffs.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty big problem being hot and taken seriously in academia, I tell her. I know calling myself hot isn't an exaggeration, because no one rolls their eyes. I am a stone-cold fox, and I fucking hate it. I had to study twice as hard to be taken half as seriously as my male coworkers. I don't tell them how. In attempts to connect to my male peers, I often can't pick up on the fact that they're flirting with me. But it's true. I had buried my nose in books, putting all my stock in the idea that I wanted to work for NASA. I'd skipped out on any extracurriculars that wouldn't help me get into the best PhD programs. Not that I would have been particularly great at making friends anyway. Despite my sacrifices and achievements, I was still the person in our lab who got sent on the coffee runs. My male peers didn't respect me because of the stupid vessel that contained my mind. I was bad at connecting. I was bad at the human experience as a whole. I remember going to HR for one of my early lab jobs to figure out a way to connect with my coworkers. It took everything in me not to cry when I saw him write, "Needs accommodation, not neurotypical," on his notepad. I doubt he thought I would see it, but that's another one of my talents. I notice things other people don't. The not neurotypical portion didn't upset me. I already knew that about myself. But the needs accommodations portion just chapped my ass.
I had been accommodating the way the rest of the world thought and interacted my entire fucking life. Would it kill anyone to accommodate me? I'll trade you bodies if you want, one girl laughs. I hate this comment, too, because it's supposed to be flattering. I would trade her in a second, though, I think, as I chew on my cuticle.
Yeah, let's trade bodies and throw in your alien boyfriend over there.
A woman with a thick Eastern European accent nods towards Seth. He's leaning against a wall on the opposite side of Earth 2's common room, with the data pad you would assume is surgically attached to his hand. There's more than one circle of chairs. 10 or so group therapy sessions are going on. He looks like he's actively trying not to pay attention, but he's bad at it. He keeps looking in all the directions that aren't me, for no reason other than to not look at me. He's not my boyfriend, I say. After he rescued me from the crash, he offered me a place to stay. No strings attached, he had said. So far, that was mostly true. The only string I noticed was the fact that he never seemed to want to leave me alone.
So he's fair game, then?
Katie, the one who called me a stripper, asks. For what?
For hooking up with? I mean, when I first got here, I was like totally anti-alien dick. But shit, it's been a while, and he's pretty easy on the eyes as far as the feline go.
Seth isn't my boyfriend, and I hold no claim on him in that way. But why do my hackles rise when I think about someone else moving in on him? He isn't unattractive. He is tall and leanly muscled like an Olympic swimmer. His closely cropped white hair is set in a very deliberate no-nonsense style. Even his gray skin has grown on me. The slight striations in color and pattern are easy to get lost in. And his eyes. His eyes are blue like the rest of the feline I'd met, but his are just a bit more teal than most. As I appreciate those irises, I realize we are staring at each other. I quickly drop my gaze and my cheeks flush. Go for it, I tell Katie. He's just my roommate. Camille narrows her eyes a bit at me.
If he's just your roommate, why did he smell your hair when you walked in?
She arches her eyebrows and smiles like she knows something I don't.
He did what?
I smooth my hands over my hair as if I could protect him from sniffing me at that very moment.
Must be a new shampoo, right?
Sarah laughs.
You must have made a mistake, a trick of the light or something.
I don't know why that embarrasses me so much, but boy, howdy does it ever.
Maybe I'll ask him to sniff me, Sarah says, her eyes almost going heart-shaped as Seth leans in the doorframe, his hand on the door's header.
The crop jacket of his gray suit rides up just enough to display the V of his hips as he types something on his datapad with his thumb. My face twists in a scowl at the thought of any woman in this room touching my alien. My alien? Fuck, that wasn't what I meant. Seth, big old gray Seth. I'm just territorial because he's my one real friend here. That's it. Nothing pervy. Friendship. There are ways he annoys me like only a roommate can. I'm never alone. Even when I'm here in our group therapy, he's hovering. I've had certain urges come back since being rescued, and finding the space in Seth's apartment to act on them has been hard. I've attempted to, well, touch myself several times since I've moved in. Without fail, he's knocking on the door of the bathroom the second I slip my fingers between my legs. If I wait until I think he's asleep, he'll inevitably pop up around some corner to ask me why I'm still awake. It's been frustrating, to say the least. Meta Kyrie pokes his head from the other side of the doorframe where Seth stands. The medic's goofy but handsome face lights up when he sees all the women in our therapy sessions. He's been charged with helping the humans adjust, teaching them about life on Santerfuhl 6, and most importantly, feline sex education. I felt so awful for him when he was trying to teach us how to use the alien condoms that they call seed sheaths. The women couldn't stop snickering, and it obviously made him uncomfortable. His face stayed flushed and blue for the entire class. Given how hugely pregnant the new human queen, Opal, is, sex education is important for us to learn on this new planet. It's kind of shocking to me that our two species would even be compatible reproductively. This situation brings up the thought of Dr. Ian Malcolm from the Jurassic Park movie, the whole life finding a way thing. I've always had a soft spot for teachers. Despite my terrible ability at connecting to other people, I want to try my best to reach out to Hyrie. Maybe he needs another friend as badly as I do. Hyrie reaches a hand out to shake Seth's, and only gets a nod in return. "Speaking of alien dick," the crass woman says, nodding toward the medic. I cut her off. "That's a gross way to talk about someone who's trying to help you." "Yeah, let's not objectify anyone during group, all right? Especially after Jessie is opening up to us about her struggles with it." Camille shoots me a sympathetic look and scribbles something into her notepad. "Let me talk to Opal and see if there's a spot for you to use your amazing brain in ways you might find more fulfilling. How does that sound?" "I'd like that. Actually, I'd love that. I'd love to be useful here." "Perfect. We'll get some gears in motion for you. I appreciate you coming to group." Camille stands and looks like she's preparing herself to give me one of her classic Camille hugs. I put my arms around myself and look away. Luckily, it seems Camille is better at social cues than I am. She fakes a stretch and tosses her braids over her shoulder, clapping her hands together. "Great group, everyone, but it's time to head on out to lunch." Her voice carries through the commons, and a handful of human women stand and stretch. Some wipe tears from their cheeks, and others yawn. I slap my palms on my thighs and sigh as I rise to my feet. I'm doubtful they'll find a science-based job for me here. I always liked to think that math and science were universal, but I don't even know if my practices and knowledge would translate to this alien world. I try if they let me, though. Before I can even follow the crowd of human women to the palace cafeteria, Seth intercepts me.
"So how'd it go?"
He gestures to the throng of girls. Seth clicks the top of his datapad 3 times, 2 more than he really needs to, and slips the little alien cell phone back into his jacket pocket. He cocks his head.
"Any breakthroughs?"
Just like always, I can't tell if he's being serious with me or not. So I err on the side of caution and reveal nothing of great importance. "They said they'll talk to Opal about finding a science position for me."
"Is that what you want?"
he asks. "I want to be useful. I feel like I'm wasting my potential sitting in your apartment all day. I mean, heck, aren't you bored of me doing nothing, too?" Seth's face pales, but he recovers quickly.
"You could come to my office with me sometime."
"And do what?" I ask him.
Whatever you want."
"That's not really a job or a purpose, though, is it?" I ask rhetorically.
"Maybe you should get better about asking for what you want, then."
He flashes me a smirk. I step toward the cafeteria before he grabs my elbow, and I flinch from his touch. He used to apologize for touching me after he found out I didn't like it, which made me feel worse. Now he just breaks contact and moves on.
"Where are you going?"
"To the cafeteria," I say hopefully, knowing already how he feels about it. It's like I could recite the speech he's about to give in my head.
"The palace kitchens are a cesspool of germs and sickness. I've got some gringoge root back at the house," he says, annoyed.
"And how many times have I told you that if I can handle a 7-Eleven roller hot dog, I'm sure I can make it out alive from the palace cafeteria. My words cue Seth's dramatic eye roll.
I just don't want you to get sick. Hyrie was telling me all about some adverse reactions some humans were having to feline foods.
I raise my hand to silence the lecture and pivot on the balls of my feet back toward our apartment. No, it's Seth's apartment. I really doubt the other human women are having bad reactions to feline food. Just as much as he's learned that I don't like to be touched, I've learned that sometimes it's not worth arguing with him. He pretends it's me he's worried about, but the amount of spray sanitizer that big gray alien puts on his four-fingered hands throughout the day leads me to believe he's the real germaphobe here. Let's go, Seth. I think I hear him take a whiff of my head as I walk past. Maybe the women in the group were right. Maybe he has been smelling me. Pulling a lock of my red curls to my nose, I take an exploratory sniff. It doesn't smell weird to me. I know that Seth's sense of smell is much keener than mine, but I suddenly worry I've become nose blind, like I did that summer after working with too many caustic chemicals in a bad vent hood. Do I stink? I turn back to see his cheeks flushed bright blue.
No.
Then why do you keep smelling me? He knits his brows together, opening his mouth a few times, but no words come out. Oh, God, I do stink. It's probably best if we go back to Seth's apartment. I can grab a shower and then eat my bland alien lunch. Never mind. I am suddenly sure I must smell awful. Let's go eat some space oatmeal.
Chapter 2. Voyeur. I hardly know her. Gra'eth. You're an attractive enough guy. You really don't have to stay in and babysit me all day. Maybe you could line up a hot date? Jessie says, waggling her eyebrows as if her words aren't kicking me in the stomach. Surely they have, like, feline Tinder on those data pads, don't they? What's Tinder? I ask. It's like a dating app. It only matches people who say they're both interested in a date. I remind myself that she's not ready for a relationship, that I stupidly promised no strings attached. But this must be some new torture devised for me by the goddess herself. For those awful words to fall out of her pretty little mouth, to assume that I could think of anyone else, utter and total Fatian nonsense. We don't have that. We have the mate bond.
The what?
She cocks her head. The mate bond. It's like biological Tinder, I suppose. When you're near the perfect person for you, something snaps into place in our biology. Her eyes go wide.
Wait, like a chemical reaction, or do you physically change? This is so interesting.
I have no idea. It's love, but more. Isn't a little mystery around the bond kind of sexy? I arch my brow at her.
No, science is sexy, Seth.
She huffs at me, not amused. She is radiant even in her pajamas, as the human women call them. Her long red mess of hair is pulled up from her neck as she lies on my bed. Her body seems comically small on the feline-sized furniture. She lies on her stomach and kicks her graceful feet back and forth absentmindedly as she reads. Jessie rests her weight on her arm as she flips through the palace's small human newsletter. The Earth 2 review keeps them all updated on the progress we've made in eradicating the Deans. It also hosts a variety of personal ads on things humans find important. Can I even call it my bed anymore? I've slept on the couch for nearly the past month. The neckline of her thin tank top dips dangerously low, barely encapsulating the swell of her breasts. I think of taking her nipple into my mouth.
Earth to Gra'eth, she barks. Well, I guess Santafrul 6 to Gra'eth. You zoned out.
I whip my eyes from her chest and try my best to hide the blue flush spreading across my cheeks. I bet every part of her tastes like cinnamon. Sorry. Your eyes reminded me of the chapel stone for a moment. The The green is a very specific color. It's thought to be one of the most beautiful colors in the universe. I lie. Only about looking at her eyes, not about their beauty.
How flattering. Eyes like rocks.
She raises an eyebrow, obviously not understanding that I'm hitting on her. I used to assume this was some fun, hard-to-get game she wished to play. A human courting ritual, perhaps. It didn't take me long to see she is actually clueless that I care for her. You know, as the royal attorney, I'm a busy man. I don't have time for dates. I brush off her terrible comment from earlier. She rolls her eyes in response and laughs.
So, go be busy somewhere else, then.
Oh, goddess, her laugh is beautiful. I'll remind you that this is still my apartment. You have something you need me out of my apartment for? I say suspiciously. I eye the trash can of used tissues and balled-up hair from her comb that sits close to the bed. If anything, I'd appreciate you prioritizing cleaning up a bit today. Jesse loves to clutter up every space she inhabits with refuse and junk, like a craw-rot decorating one of its stinking nests. There was a time, when Jesse first started staying with me, that it would cause me to go into a full-blown panic attack. My apartment was so much easier to keep sterile before my mate arrived. Jesse inspires such a perplexing gambit of emotions for me.
First, yes, I will pick up my mess. Make sure you tell me if it's bothering you. I'm not great at picking up on context clues, as I keep reminding you. Second, well, you know, I haven't had a ton of alone time since the whole dramatic rescue thing,
Jesse says plainly.
What if I wanted some time to myself? Would that be so awful?
She glances down at the trash and grimaces.
It is getting a little messy, isn't it?
I set my jaw. Yes, it would be fatiguing awful. Every second I'm away from her, the mate bond screams. What a fun little evolutionary quirk the feline have developed, to make me manic the second my mate is out of my sight. She can complain about me hovering all she wants. She doesn't know the pain I feel when I have to leave. What would you even do differently if I was gone?
Lord help me, does your species not understand the idea of a little self-care?
She drags her feet to sitting and dangles them off the side of my bed. They swing, not even getting close to the floor. I'd forgotten that humans were some great interstellar civilization, nothing compared to our simple little feline minds. I throw my hands up in exasperation. Jesse blinks at me with a deadpan face, like she always does when I'm being sarcastic. I'm sorry. What I meant to say is yes, the feline understands self-care. Do you want me to set up a spa day? The mud pits of the Lingen Reefs are supposed to be very restorative.
Graeth, what if I just want you to find something to do so I can diddle myself?
Jesse frowns. Diddle? I wait patiently for my translator chip to catch up, but it struggles on the word. Jesse draws a gulp of air into her chest, her face softens, and she whispers something under her breath. I can't understand her, though. What?
Masturbate, Graeth. I haven't had any alone time to masturbate. Nothing personal, but could you find something to do for a few hours today? Let a girl work one out?
Her grimace deepens. Taken aback, I turn my head left and right, looking for anything to focus on besides Jesse. My mate just asked me to leave my apartment so she can pleasure herself, alone.
Yeah. Is the cool and collected phrase my piece-of-shit brain pops down to my mouth.
I grab my satchel, jacket, and data pad and head for the door.
I appreciate how we can be up front, Rumi.
I hate that word.
I can do the same sometime, too, if you need to let off some steam.
I can't even look back at her as I shut the door and make my way to my palace office. My apartment lies on the opposite side of the compound, and I wind my way through the ornate hallways at record speed. What could I have even said to her request? I can't even tell the poor girl she's my mate, so I most assuredly can't tell her I've been jerking my cock every night on the couch. That just her scent filling my apartment is enough to keep me hard almost constantly. That Graeth, the no-nonsense cutthroat attorney, had to bite a Fatian throw pillow to stop from moaning like a schoolboy. I've imagined filling her in every possible way. No, it's not the Fatian time or place for those conversations. I can only imagine what smell.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?